Once we make the reductions in right size government, then we'll look for revenue.
Alaska's Senate president lays out his plan for the legislative session. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, January 21st. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Alaskans talk about what they want to hear Governor Walker say in his State of the State address tonight.
I'm hoping that he'll start using the PFD because that's what it's for. We're in a crisis.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. At the Salmon Project, they know that Alaskan lives are salmon lives. Join them this winter as they journey across the state and hear the stories of Alaskans whose lives are amazingly similar to yours, even if they live 2,000 miles away. Learn more at salmonlife.org. This message sponsored by the Salmon Project.
The majority caucus in the state Senate has one priority this year, restoring fiscal stability to Alaska. And Senate President Kevin Meyer of Anchorage says permanent fund earnings will have to be part of that mix. But Meyer says the first order of business will be trimming the state budget, and he says there is room to make substantial reductions.
Getting to about $800 million reduction, similar to what we had last year, is certainly doable, possible. But we don't think that we'll get there if we go after revenue first, because the tendency is not to make reductions. It's painful oftentimes, and we don't like to do it. So we want to go there first. Once we make the reductions in right-size government, squeeze out the fat, duplication, then we'll look for revenue that will help us give us the fiscal stability that we're talking about in that first priority.
Do you have concerns that there is kind of a sweet spot as far as how much you can cut without impacting the economy in a way in the state? As you know, the state drives a lot of the economy with state spending. Is there a number that you feel like if we go below when you're making cuts that the economy could implode even further?
We do think that we can make some further reductions in state government with not being detrimental to the economy. What we do worry about and we do fear is that if we were to implement all the different taxes that the governor has proposed, that would be too much of a hit and that would be detrimental to the economy. For example, an income tax now, all of a sudden people have less money in their paychecks. A fuel tax, all of a sudden now people are paying more at the pump for gas. And if you're a drinker or smoker now, all of a sudden you're paying more for that. So all of these things add up, and pretty soon you as a private individual, and then also the governor's plan on dealing with the permanent dividend, cutting that essentially in half, all those things added up now all of a sudden leaves the individual Alaskan with less money to spend in the economy. And that combined with a reduction in state government would be detrimental to our economy, yes.
Are all taxes anathema to what you want to do, or are there some that you can support? Otherwise, how will you solve the budget problem without any taxes?
Yeah, we don't feel like we need to resolve all of it this year, in the sense that, as I mentioned, to do too much in one year would be devastating and a negative impact to your economy. However, if we can get that gap to about, let's say $500 million to $1 billion, that's a good thing. And I would see this session as being successful if we're able to do that. And the reason why I say that is that we still have $9 billion in savings. So if you're only drawing, let's say, $1 billion out of your savings, well, that still leaves you, another 8 years to use your savings. And that buys you time to see if oil prices will go back up or if the gas pipeline is viable. And then let people run for re-election. And during the election process, you can have the discussions on, well, should it be an income tax? Should it be a sales tax? Or should it be some other tax? I think that would be a very good topic to have out there as you run for re-election or for election to office.
It's going to be a big, difficult task. Democrats and Republicans have said they will have to work together more this session than in the past. You've been mentioning, talking about lobbyists trying to maybe cause debate for just a single issue. How do you plan to accomplish that, getting both Democrats and Republicans to really work together?
Well, I think Alaskans are going to insist on it. Frankly, on this side again, the Senate, and I can only speak to the Senate, Senator Gardner and I work very well together. We have weekly meetings. We met today. We plan on meeting every week going forward. Certainly, her team, my team, know that we have this challenge that has to be resolved, and we know that it's going to require a give and take on both sides in order to get there. I just hope that, you know, we're able to, and I think the Senate, we will do this. Keep the rhetoric down. I mean, certainly there's differences in opinion and philosophies on both sides, but in this case, we got to set that aside and just do what's best for Alaska.
Senate President Kevin Meyer is a Republican from Anchorage. Tomorrow, we'll hear from Senate Minority Leader Berta Gardner. Governor Bill Walker is giving his State of the State address tonight. The state is facing tough times. Walker's budget plan includes a reduction in the permanent fund dividend payments that Alaskans receive each year. APRN state government reporter Andrew Kitchenman met up with Alaskans at Juneau's legislative welcome reception last night and asked what they want to hear from the governor.
I would like to hear him address the budget cuts for AK pre-K, as well as any early childhood education programs that are in the state of Alaska. I'm concerned because I'm an advocate for early childhood education, and with the budget cuts, it's going to affect a lot of children, especially children that are in low income areas that need AK pre-K.
I'm hoping that he'll start using the PFD because that's what it's for. We're in a crisis, and that is our rainy day, and we are in the rain, literally and figuratively, when it comes to our oil being $27 a barrel now.
Many of the things that rural Alaskans need are health care, education, VPSO program, and a whole lot of things that, you know, we take for granted, like the fishing game.
You know, I'd like to hear more about his plan on reforming the PFD in order to balance state services and revenue. I also would like to hear what he has to say about public education. We've been flat funded for quite a few years, and as a result, we've really, really felt the pinch here in Juneau.
I would like to see some more options on how we can keep the ferries going. Every school district in Southeast Alaska depends on it. Most of us that grew up in Southeast, it's a point of pride to us. It's like our state troopers. It's very uniquely Alaskan. There's no place else in the world that has a system like that.
That was Mildred Parker of Anchorage, Janet Cousart of Juneau, Bonnie Aojack of Manicotic, Emil Mackey of Juneau, and Travis Lewis of Hoona, talking with APRN's Andrew Kitchenman. The governor's State of the State speech will air at 7 p.m. tonight on most APRN stations. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the Alaska Raptor Center says goodbye to a well-loved eagle.
She liked to yell at other bald eagles that were outside. Even though she is a captive bird, she still owns the skies around her.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Artists make us think and question. They excite and engage. Artists inspire Alaska. The 2016 Rasmussen Foundation Individual Artist Awards Grant Program is now accepting applications. Individual Artist Awards support Alaska artists in 10 creative disciplines at all career stages. The program is open to Alaska residents only. For details and to apply, visit rasmussen.org/IAA. The deadline is March 1st, 2016. This message sponsored by the Rasmussen Foundation.
It's official. The fish formerly known as Alaska pollock now goes by a single name. It's just called pollock now. That's according to the FDA, which today updated its list of acceptable seafood marketing names. It matters because when Alaska was part of the fish name, purveyors of foreign pollock could fool consumers with the FDA's blessing into thinking the fish they were buying was from Alaska when it wasn't. Senators Lisa Murkowski of Alaska and Maria Cantwell of Washington State both claim credit for forcing the name change on the FDA in the year-end spending bill. Now, the FDA says only pollock caught in the waters off Alaska can be labeled Alaska or Alaskan pollock. When Pentagon nominees come before the Senate Armed Services Committee for a confirmation hearing, it's a sure bet that Senator Dan Sullivan will press them on the 425. That's the Brigade Combat Team at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson that's slated for reduction. This morning was another case in point. APRN's Liz Ruskin reports.
Eric Fanning is nominated to be the next Secretary of the Army. So he's a prime target of Sullivan's campaign to draw attention to the role the 425 plays.
Does the U.S. Army have any other airborne brigade that is trained, equipped, and ready to fight and win in sub-zero mountain climates like those in the Arctic or those in North Korea?
No, not like those. Not like those we have in Alaska.
For Sullivan, these confirmation hearings are a chance to squeeze a nominee for a public commitment to reconsider the J-Bear reduction. Fanning offered little resistance.
If confirmed, Senator, I would look for ways to reverse as many of the combat cuts that the Army made last year as possible, to include Alaska.
Other Republican senators and independent Senator Angus King of Maine chimed in to support more military focus on the Arctic in light of Russia's military buildup in its far north. Fanning has worked in the civilian leadership of all three military branches. He seems well-versed in the case for a strong military presence in Alaska. In fact, when answering questions from Senator King, Fanning showed that Alaska's selling points have persuaded him in the past.
As regards the Arctic and Alaska in particular, when I became acting Secretary of the Air Force about 2 years ago, one of the first things I did was reverse an Air Force decision to move a squadron of aggressors of fighter jets out of Alaska because of the strategic importance there, because of the range space we had there, because of the proximity, not just to adversaries or potential adversaries in the Pacific, but proximity to our partners.
The Army last summer announced it would cut 2,600 soldiers from the Anchorage base and 75 from Fort Wainwright due to budget pressure. Army Chief of Staff Mark Milley later said the decision was still under review. If confirmed, Fanning would be the first openly gay Army secretary, a point that did not come up at the hearing. Republican Senator Pat Roberts of Kansas has pledged to block his confirmation unless the White House promises none of the Guantanamo prisoners will be transferred to Fort Leavenworth. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Although the proposed Alaska LNG pipeline is still a long way from reality, a state committee is working on a fiscal scheme that would compensate local governments for property taxes they would forfeit under the current agreement with gas line producers. The Municipal Advisory Gas Project Review Board is devising a formula to distribute more than $15 billion in anticipated state gas line taxes over a 25-year period to local governments impacted by the project. The Matanuska-Susitna Borough would be affected greatly, and Borough Mayor Vern Halter says he wants to make sure the borough gets its fair share of the money.
You know darn well the Matsu Borough is going to host the greatest part of the impact along with the Fairbanks area, really, when you're building this pipeline, because this is really the future of the Matsu Borough in my mind.
Borough Auditor James Wilson updated the Borough Assembly on progress on a proposed tax plan at a recent meeting. Wilson said it would be similar to a payment in lieu of taxes or PILT plan. The state would collect the future taxes on the LNG line, and each municipality would get a share of the money based on the percentage of the gas line project within its borders. The question is, how much say would the municipalities have in assessing the impact? Halter said an early draft of the fiscal legislation did not accurately assess the Matsu Borough's fair share.
What this legislation would do, would the Matsu Borough would give up the right to tax the property for these payments. and it just seemed like this one was so far off base. I wouldn't do this, no way.
The review board's plan also provides payments to municipalities based on population, regardless of any connection to the LNG line, to ensure its benefits are shared by the state as a whole. According to the State Department of Revenue, no action was taken on the draft fiscal plan at the review board's meeting on January 15th. Mayor Halter said today the borough has expressed its concerns and that draft will be worked on over the next weeks to more accurately reflect equitable pilt shares for each municipality. The Alaska Board of Fisheries finished its consideration of proposals from the Kuskokwim, Yukon, and Norton Sound regions on Saturday. For the Yukon, the board rejected a proposal to allow purse seining for summer chum salmon. But the board unanimously supported a proposal laying the groundwork for a new pink salmon-directed commercial fishery on the Yukon. The pink salmon commercial fishery will only be allowed in District 1. Fishermen earlier told the board that the bycatch of king salmon should be minimal because pinks move in much shallower water than kings.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the Red Dog Mine, committed to environmental excellence.
Alaska's tobacco quitline reminds you that 88% of Alaskans don't allow smoking in their home. A smoke-free environment helps prepare kids for a healthier life and a future free from tobacco. And it makes good economic sense. Secondhand smoke damages property, decreasing its value. Exposure to its toxins lead to disease and increased medical costs. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or enroll online at alaskaquitline.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline.
The First Alaskans Institute in Anchorage is hosting a gathering it's calling Partners for the Next 10,000 Years, a Racial Equity Summit. They're inviting the public to join in discussions on ways to use education, law, policy, and advocacy to work toward racial equity. KMBA's Jacqueline Estes reports.
Andrea Sanders is the Alaska Native Policy Director for the First Alaskans Institute. She says organizers are seeking a range of views for thoughtful, candid conversations on race. They've invited public policymakers and representatives of business and communities of color, as well as the general public. Sanders says the goal is to bring people together and to mobilize action.
Our goal is to really change people's perspective on racial equity issues and really bringing them to a point of having a personal or professional commitment to this work so that they can join us in instilling racial equity as a value of all Alaskans.
It can be uncomfortable to talk about race issues. Speakers will give presentations on topics such as white privilege, institutional racism, microaggressions, and internalized oppression. But Sanders says creative and non-traditional speakers, including a hip-hop scholar from New York, a Maori educator from New Zealand, and an attorney and author from the Blackfeet and Suquamish reservations, will also share powerful stories that inform and inspire, as well as instruct. Ann Sanders says the sketch comedy group 1491 will lighten the mood.
We're finding ways to bring humor, which is one of our native values, into the space on a topic that's not always very easy to discuss. So we're trying to break down the barriers and bringing in humor, bringing in international and national perspectives so that it's easier for folks, a little bit easier to digest in receiving it in different ways of communication.
The Racial Equity Summit, hosted by the First Alaskans Institute, is scheduled for February 1st and 2nd in Anchorage. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jacqueline Estes.
Set in a fictional Tlingit village in the late 19th century, Our Voices Will Be Heard is Vera Starbird's semi-autobiographical story of a mother whose daughter is sexually abused by a relative. The show premiered Friday at Perseverance Theater in Juneau and will play in Anchorage in February. KTOO's Jennifer Canfield has the story.
Our Voices Will Be Heard actually began as a short story Vera Starbird wrote when she was 18 years old. It came together at an all-night diner where she began writing at 10 p.m.
And I stopped writing about 4 o'clock in the morning. I just sat there and the waitress kept bringing me diet sodas. And it was done. I mean, that was really, while I did a few little revisions of it, the whole story was finally told. And it was a huge kind of healing moment in my life. And I never really did anything with it.
About 10 years later, she heard about the Alaska Native Playwrights Project and decided to apply. She got in and during the process began to understand the story she wanted to tell was more than just her own. One of the most difficult experiences she had when writing the play came about halfway through the year-long project.
I had a relative, a cousin, who was, I grew up with like a brother, who became an abuser himself.
It hit her hard. Here she was trying to artfully make sense of the sexual abuse she had experienced as a child, and she learns her cousin was an abuser. Then she finds out he'd been abused by the same uncle who had hurt her.
It was surprising to me that I still loved him. I loved him like a brother, and that didn't change because of these things he had done. And that struggle within myself to come to terms with not wanting that person to be around children anymore and wanting to protect children from him, and me still loving him and still caring about him and caring about what happened to him. And I really took that into the play.
The play is quite different from the story Starbird wrote when she was 18. That version, she says, was from the perspective of a child. The younger Vera saw her abuser as a boogeyman, an evil figure to be despised, not pitied or missed.
There's a scene in there where the mother is talking to Raven and sort of going through these emotions herself, where she does confess that she misses this family who turned against her and hurt her child. That would not have been in there when I was 18.
In the years since her all-nighter at the diner, Starbird came to understand what her own mother endured. She saw the toll it took on her to report her own brother, and she realized how lucky she was to have a mother who steadfastly supported her despite being ostracized by family members who preferred the abuse go unaddressed. 3 days before the first reading of the play in Anchorage, Starbird told her mother what it was about.
She actually thanked me at the end of the reading. It doesn't show mother being perfect, but it shows a mother never giving up. That's what I really wanted to talk about, that was important to me in my life, that I had a mother who never gave up, even when she was struggling herself.
Starbird's story is not unique. Alaska has one of the highest rates of child sexual abuse and child abuse in general in the nation. Despite that, state lawmakers spent 2 years debating a bill to require K-12 students to receive age-appropriate education on sexual abuse and teen dating violence. Starbird wrote letters and testified at the Capitol in favor of Aaron's Law, which eventually was adopted as the Alaska Safe Children's Act. As Starbird has gone through the process of writing, revising, and holding readings for her play, she's seen the signs that more education about child abuse is sorely needed.
Since this has come out, a lot of people have come up, and some of them said, well, I've never been abused, but, and then they tell some story, and I realize, no, that's abuse. That really is abuse, and they generally don't see it that way because it's been minimalized in their own life.
Starbird says she hopes people who see the play leave feeling hopeful and energized.
I think it's a pretty light-giving play, a play that gives healing, that it's not something that they're going to walk away from and wonder what to do, that they're actually just from the play be motivated to do something, to act, to find some hope in.
In Juneau, the play runs through February 7th. A representative from Search or Aware will be available after each showing. Volunteers from Standing Together Against Rape will also be present when the play shows in Anchorage. In Juneau, I'm Jennifer Canfield.
The Alaska Raptor Center lost one of its famed and feathered ambassadors last month. Hallie, the bald eagle, died in early December. KCAW's Brielle Schaefer has the story.
Hallie, one of the center's birds used for education, was best known for her crossed beak. Here's Jennifer Smith, the center's avian education supervisor.
It gave her a very quizzical expression all the time. She always looked like she was thinking of something mischievous because of that beak.
The eagle came to the Raptor Center when she was around 6 months old, after she was found starving in Juneau. She was known for her playful demeanor, bopping around her enclosure, and bossing around other birds.
She liked to yell at other bald eagles that were outside. Even though she is a captive bird, she still owns the skies around her.
Her beak also made her a popular resident at the center. Everyone wanted to adopt Hallie. But her deformed yet distinguishable mouth also caused her lots of trouble. Hallie had problems eating because her beak could not rip or tear food properly. To make it easier for her, center staff cut up her fish servings into 1-inch sized chunks.
Watching her eat was actually kind of sad because you could see the frustration in her face as she was trying to get the food from the stump into her mouth, and she wanted to eat much more quickly than she was capable of eating.
Her beak also got in the way of her grooming. Smith explains.
She wasn't able to get to that preening gland and stimulate it and clean it as it's supposed to. It's this really kind of funky looking thing that's right at the base of their tail. And because she couldn't use it properly, it kind of got backed up and clogged and a little infected.
Smith says that was harmful to her because eagles need to stimulate their preening glands to weatherproof their feathers. And because we're in a rainforest, it meant that Hallie was pretty chilly. As you can imagine, her many health problems made her miserable.
Very cranky. And in one case, you know, it sent one of our curators to the hospital. She ended up doing what we call footing, and that is, you know, grabbing with her talons in an aggressive way.
That's the center's executive director, Peter Coulson. He says she retired from being an education bird this fall after spending the summer in Ketchikan in an outreach program. Named after Holland America Line, which loaned the center money to buy their plot, Hallie lived out her days in an enclosure outside the center as one of a trio of eagles that oversaw the comings and goings of the tourist destination and avian hospital.
It was always very cool, or first thing in the morning, you know, to get out of my car or my truck and walk up there and have these three eagles there. I missed coming in the morning and not having her, you know, sitting there as part of that sort of welcoming group of birds.
The center had hoped to have her longer, as bald eagles can live from 35 years in the wild to 50 years in captivity. But as Smith says, it is for the best.
I'm really happy that she's not suffering anymore. It's a sad loss, but it's good to know that she's not struggling to eat or clean herself or getting soaking wet in rainstorm anymore.
Coulson says the center is in the process of training other raptors to become education birds and perhaps fill Hallie's perch. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Brielle Schaefer.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Ellen Lockyer and Jacqueline Estes in Anchorage, Tim Bodoni in Galena, Jennifer Canfield in Juneau, and Brielle Schaefer in Sitka. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Monica Goki is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the 2016 statewide BP Teachers of Excellence program. Teacher nomination forms are available at bpteachers.com. It's as easy as 1, 2, 3. 1, file your 2016 PFD application today. 2, receive a confirmation of filing. And 3, sign electronically with your secure My Alaska account. Visit pfd.alaska.gov for more information. And remember, the deadline to apply is Thursday, March 31st. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
From Ketchikan to Kotzebue, Alaskan lives are salmon lives. Join the Salmon Project this winter as they learn how Alaskans from every corner of the state live lives full of salmon. Learn more at salmonproject.org. This message sponsored by the Salmon Project.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.